You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 271st edition of Assembly Call Radio. It's our 272nd and our 880th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of December 1st, 2022, right after a huge win by your Indiana Hoosiers. I'm your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of Assembly Call, how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. This week's banner moment occurred last night in Assembly Hall when the Indiana Hoosiers defeated North Carolina 77-65 with a suffocating defensive effort. Whether it was the block party at the rim or the extreme ball pressure by the perimeters, Indiana was locked in defensively. That makes this old coach a happy man and made a lot of Hoosier fans happy as well. North Carolina made a couple of runs throughout the game, but the cumulative effect of multiple Indiana defenders in the grill of each and every Carolina player was immense. The outcome of the game was greater than the final score. Indiana dominated this game on the defensive end. Now, the fouling needs to be adjusted some and maybe a few too many offensive rebounds, but this team flat out guards people. What does that mean? This team will compete in every game, will create havoc on every opponent, and will be able to overcome droughts in offense throughout the season. Jared asked a question in the community about trusting Indiana basketball. Well, this team can be trusted to play defense every night because Coach Woodson demands attention to it on a daily basis. Defense wins championships. I do trust this team, knowing that there will be off nights for sure over a 31-game schedule. However, teams that lock in on the defensive end can and will bounce back quickly from those moments. Hey, Big Ten, Indiana's about to guard you for 40 freaking minutes. You ready? We'll see. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host for the week. There's some of the regular crew spoke last night on the game, and so we brought on the two coaches for tonight's Assembly Call Radio. It's the Steven Spielberg of Indiana basketball film, a Southport legend. It's Coach Tony Adranya. Tony, what's on your mind after last night's awesome victory?
Hey, Coach, I'm super happy to be here. Especially after a win. It's always nice when Jared shoots a text on a Monday or Tuesday, ask if I can come on, and then IU gets the W before. It's always easier to talk about after a win, but super excited. You know, you mentioned it at the top there. Indiana's going to guard you for 40 minutes. That was my main takeaway and my main tweet after yesterday's game was relentless effort for 40 minutes. It's all you can ask for as a coach and as a fan of this Indiana basketball program. And, you know, just super pumped up about the product that was on the floor last night.
Yeah, it just was a night. I was fortunate to be able to be in the building. It just a lot of energy it started with defense and it ended with defense. And so here's what we're going to talk about this week here on Assembly Call Radio. Segment one is just our general impressions of IU's win and the importance of getting that win last night. Segment two, Coach and I are going to break things down, X's and O's, just a coaching session. So stick with us for that. And then we'll answer your questions in the mailbag in section three. All of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Homefield Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. The bottom line is that Homefield has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for each of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. What could be better than that? I know I've bought some for Christmas. There's some good codes out there. Go buy, whether it's an assembly call shirt, Indiana, or another college. I collect them all. Have way too many. I don't think you can have way too many. But anyway, go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, so let's just go back to, Coach, the importance of last night. It's a program that has struggled for years. We bring back a former player. Things started to go in the right direction last year with a great Big Ten tournament run and an entry into the NCAA tournament. And then a lot of questions on how everything was going to play out this year. So then they go on the road and beat Xavier, and then they come home and beat former number one, North Carolina. How big of a win, in your opinion, was last night's victory?
Well, again, I'm just joking. That was a Mike Woodson joke there. It's important. What I thought was neat was it was a very important win because for all the things you just mentioned above, in terms of, was IU kind of pretenders or contenders and kind of how they ended the season last year and coming into this year with hype. And what I enjoyed is that any way you slice it, it was a big win. But when you ask the team that question and you asked Mike Woodson and Trace Jackson Davis, their answers were, Mike Woodson's was, it's not a statement win, it's our schedule. Trace Jackson Davis was good win. We need to go win at the rack at Rutgers now on Saturday. Like, I think that shows a level of maturity for this team. As fans, we're allowed to be fans. We're fanatics. We get fired up about everything. But for them, I love that, they're not allowing themselves to get too high or too low. And that's going to be crucial throughout the grind of the Big Ten season. Because right now, we're riding the highest fans. And obviously they're excited about their win against North Carolina and their record of late, but they're going to hit some dips this season. It's inevitable. They'll lose a couple in a row or something may happen where they're not going to be riding this high. But I think that they're so even keeled and locked in right now, where when they hit those valleys, that it's not going to just decrescendo into just something that's madness. And, some of those long losing streaks we saw in, February's have passed. And that to me is so important when you're going through the grind of the Big Ten season. So, as a fan and as a program, I'm super excited about the win last night because I do think it was important. But I also enjoyed the answers that we got from the team about how they're staying even keeled after a big win like that.
We've talked about on a variety of shows the narrative of initially this was going to be an upset opportunity as the number one team was coming in, and then they got knocked off, and the narrative switched to where we just needed to take care of business. And boy, this team, we've talked a lot about being focused. They were locked in. They were connected offensively and defensively, and that's how you win these big games. And it is just vitally important to stack these wins. And then add to your comments, the players, X tweets out the Field of 68 clip where Geo Baker says no one's afraid of Indiana. They enjoyed that win last night, but now they're focusing again, on the next opponent. And I'm not a big fan of blackboard material. I think you can only use it so often. But this might be a time where the rack, Jersey Mike's, has been a tough place for Indiana to go and play. And you got a former player talking trash about no one's afraid of Indiana. Now might be that one, two times a year that you use it. But it seems to me, to back up what you said, we're excited about last night, but now they're going to be focused here on getting on a plane, flying to New Jersey, and trying to get the first Big Ten win because their goals are to win championships. And I just feel really good as a fan and as someone who supports the team for how serious. I'm a big warm-up guy, and I say it way too much on the show, but I go down there 2 hours early, and I just sit and watch how they work. And they're very serious about their work. Yes, they have their Beats headphones in and all that kind of stuff. But it seems to be a lot more focused and connected. And you're right. That's how you're going to weather storms of adversity within games and within the season, which is a grind, and try to eliminate some of those long droughts. But, man, the atmosphere Tony, was just great. I was telling you before we got on, it was hard for me not to cheer on media because we're supposed to be neutral. But it was so good to see the student section just packed, everyone in white standing up early. The marching band was out right before the start to get people pumped up. That's Indiana basketball. How did that play across the television from your vantage point?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, you could feel the buzz and the energy exuding, you know, even on social media. Like, you could tell just the buzz and the energy based on, you know, people camped out the night before and stuff. And then I was a little disappointed that I was hoping to get a little bit more of the pregame coverage and stuff, but because the Duke Ohio State game ran over, we actually ended up on ESPN News to start the game. So we didn't get to see, like, the lead in and the warm up, right. You know, like the lineups and stuff like that, because I can just imagine the electricity and assembly call from just being there for big games in the past. But you could still absolutely feel it through the TV as well when things got going, especially, you know, after Trey got those two breakaways in a row. Like, I just knew that, like, Assembly Hall is absolutely rocking right now. And I think I even tweeted something out at that point, like, there's 8 big-time recruits at this game right now. I don't know that this sound in Assembly Hall leaves their ears for quite some time. Like, it's one of those, like, moments where you're like, wow, this place is pretty special right now.
Yeah, and I forgot to tell you, X retweeted your tweet about the Field of 68. So he's following you, so you got to make sure you're always positive with X. But let's piggyback on Assembly Hall, because we had a game right before we came on, how great the fans are and the environment at Assembly Hall with our incredible women's team winning a big game against number 6 North Carolina in dominating fashion, Coach, without Grace Berger, whose injury seems to be not as – not career ending, it would be career ending, season ending, that, like, she has a chance to come back, which is great news, but she'll be out for a while. But without just a superstar, you go in and win in dominating fashion in that Assembly Hall. So not only is it electric for the men's program, but it's also becoming a home court advantage for the women. Did you have a chance to watch any of that? I watched most of it while I was preparing for the show and listened into our crew that on Doing the Work, who does a good job. They did their post-game show right before us. Man, that's a fun team. They shot the crap out of the basketball tonight.
If an IU men's team shot like that, I think Twitter would catch fire. Like,
yeah,
they can shoot. Those women can absolutely shoot the basketball. They play their absolute tails off. Again, you know, defensive effort. I mean, they won that game, and it was never in doubt from the tip against the Tar Heels. And so, yeah, I was with you. I'm the same as you. Preparing for this, I was watching the game, had it on here. You know, they're so fun to watch as well. And they gel so well together. They click. You can tell they have fun out there. Like, all the things that you want in your basketball team, both the men's and the women's program have that right now. And that, I mean, what better time to be a Hoosier basketball fan than right now?
They guard. They run some good stuff. You know, we're going to talk about spacing in segment 2. I thought the spacing in the women's game was just fantastic. And I love that little backdoor give and go. And then when the tag came in, the one play I remember is the kick out to Sydney Parrish, who did a nice job of spotting up to the open spot, hitting that shot. I mean, they are just – if you're able to go see a game, man, put that on your list for this season, because I think both teams are special. But, man, that was a fun
night. Have the opportunities to do special things. That's what's awesome.
Absolutely. So okay, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we're going to do a deep dive into the X's and O's from last night's win. So stick with us.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events.
With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Ethan Happ, and I never listen to the Assembly Call, especially the episodes that Ryan is on.
All right, we'd like to welcome Ethan Happ then to listen to the show since Ryan is not with us tonight. But I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni. I'm with Coach Adranya, and it's time for Coach's Corner. And it's a lot of fun breaking down film when you win, because Coach and I, you and I have both had a lot of breakdown of film when our teams have lost, and it's a necessary job to do. But it's always a lot more fun after a big victory. So our main segment tonight is brought to you by our new sponsor, True Blood Real Estate. Jim Trueblood is a longtime friend of Jared's and the founder of owner of True Blood Real Estate, where he's been helping people in Indiana buy and sell property since 2006. And starting this season, True Blood Real Estate is the exclusive and official real estate partner of IU Athletics, with a team of talented agents to serve you in Bloomington and throughout Indiana. So if you're looking to buy or sell a state in Indiana, you need to experience the True Blood advantage. Go to trueblood.com. That's TrueBlood.com to learn more. That's trueblood.com, and tell them the Assembly Call sent you. So, Tony, we're going to start off on defense because, man, that's what won the game last night, and that's what we're all kind of happy about right now. I thought the overall – from the start to the finish, defense was just absolutely intense and took North Carolina out of a lot of things. And you mentioned the switching aspect predominantly that you wanted to start talking about. So we'll turn it over to you to talk about how you thought that worked and why it was effective last night in defending North Carolina.
Yeah, and it really dates back to the Xavier game is when I first noticed IU doing this. And essentially – it's called a Chicago action because the Bulls used to run it with Derrick Rose a lot. But basically, a player's coming off of a pin-down screen, and then it's directly into a dribble handoff. So it's basically like a double ball screen almost for the guy getting the ball. And it's really hard to guard because you have basically three guys you got to account for in terms of who's rolling, who's popping, the ball handler attacking downhill. And IU has done a tremendous job. And they started it in the Xavier game, and then they did it last night as well. When they're guarding that action, they're going to switch the guy that hands it off. They're going to switch his defender onto the ball, and then they're going to have a big take the big that's rolling to the basket, and a guard's going to stay with the guy that pops. And teams are – Xavier and North Carolina have both just struggled with Indiana doing that because nobody else has done it to them, I'm fairly certain. And usually when teams run that Chicago action, somebody's getting it up open, because there's either a miscommunication or they're trailing from behind. So then, you know, the ball handler can put somebody on their hip and get to the rim. And North Carolina, really, they had no answer because Indiana was just switching a guy onto the ball handler. And then the big had another big on him rolling to the basket. So there wasn't anything there. And the guy popping had a guy taking away the pop. And so really all they could try to do was isolate our big that had switched onto the ball. But they took so many bad shots that it didn't really matter. So it's just something that it's a minor detail, and it's something you got to pick up in the scout, and then you got to drill it. Like, it's not like Indiana just goes out there and they execute this because they talked about it in film earlier that day. Like, it's something that coaches have picked up on film days in advance. They drill it. They talk through it. They show it on film to the team. The team goes out there, and then they execute it to an absolute T. And, you know, that's what I want to articulate is how the little details of things like that are so important, and the little things go such a long way and turn into something so big, in which ends up last night, you know, being a tremendous defensive effort. Like, those are things that happen days in advance. It didn't just happen overnight that a switch flipped and Indiana got good at defense. Like, these are little drills that they're being disciplined in, and then it turned into, you know, what we see last night.
You have to rep it out, and that comes from your scouting. Whoever had to scout decided that was a way that they wanted to attack that particular offensive part of North Carolina. And then you have to break it down into drills, and then you got to break it down into live action. And we always broke down special things in shell you know, three on three, four on four, and just repped it. But the thing in a college game is you've got to do that with some intensity because of the number of practices in between games. You don't have a whole week like we had in high school. Let me ask you this, because the question was, they ran – I understand that Chicago is a handoff into a ball screen, basically, on a side. Mm-hmm. But they ran some staggered double handoffs, yep, too, where IU guarded it a little differently. They kind of chased that, didn't they?
They
and
did.
Then had the big drop, and that's where you saw a lot of the floating runners that they hit one or two, but a lot of contested twos at the rim off of a staggered screen as two screeners – for off the ball on a guy coming off the corner, and then that guy off the corner gets a handoff, usually from a big. And it's hard for your big defender to switch on to a guard if you wanted to switch. Indiana didn't switch that double stagger ball screen Chicago-type action, correct?
Correct. They did not. And, yeah, so they were, like you said, they were trailing that ball handler, and then they went in basically a drop coverage off of the ball screen there. And we're actually kind of teasing my film room in the community, because I think I clipped six of those clips when Indiana did that. And I think North Carolina only converted one of them. And basically, I think Indiana knew they could run that coverage because they knew that North Carolina's guards were not going to give that ball up to the big. You'll see in the film room that they had opportunities to hit guys. Like Indiana's coverage was dependent upon what they thought North Carolina was going to do with the ball, and North Carolina played right into their hands. They shot.
Were they tagging at all off the strong side wing as that
ball
was coming off?
It was like a hand on the tackle.
It wasn't a full.
Correct. And so they had opportunities, and even when the tag guy would get lower and would try to take that, they had the opposite corner, and I think Caleb Love only hit that opposite corner once. Instead, they were shooting these tough runners over Trace Jackson Davis. I think Trace got two different blocks on him. I think Race got a block on that exact action. That was North Carolina's kind of bread and butter action that they were getting great looks off of. And, you know, time after time, they shot tough runners over Trace Jackson Davis or Race Thompson. And like I said, I think they were like 1 for 6 on him or something like that.
Heavy ball screen in the middle, heavy Chicago action. They went to that staggered double. A lot of ball screen handoff stuffs. I thought their most effective stuff was what I call the rip screen or the diagonal screen for Nance to get into the post. They scored on that two or three times. But I'm interested. I love, and this is something I gained from our head coach at Western, Mike Lewis, that we really wanted teams to take tough twos. And sometimes when you watch and that guy turns the corner at the top and he drives down the lane, you want to say, why are you letting a guy drive? Keep him out of the lane. But sometimes that's by design. When you have good rim protection, which you do in Race and TJD, and those guards want to score, that's a great part of scouting too that you brought up, that to give credit to the whole coaching staff, like those guys want shots. What did Caleb Love took 37 shots in the 4 overtime? Like he doesn't want to pass the ball, and that's part of the problem. So you take advantage of that as a coaching staff and set your defense for that, and that double handoff, it's a little different. You can't triple switch that because there's 4 people involved.
Right.
You could switch it and have the big come out in high hedge, but then you got Baycott or someone rolling off that handoff, which could be dangerous. You had Nance popping. But so there's 2 different actions, one on the side with Chicago handoff ball screen, one with a staggered double, and the team had to know how to guard it differently. But sometimes we as fans get frustrated when that little floater hook shot by a guard goes in, but that's by design. Because, as you said, of 6 times, maybe they scored only once. You play the statistics, and as coaches, we got to choose to give up something. You're not going to prevent everything. So you want to take away the 3 with some teams. You want to double the post in other teams. Well, this one is you got selfish guards on that other side. Put them in a position where they think they're open. We're going to throw the size at them and make it difficult. And so that's something great to watch. I'm looking forward to your film room, which you just do a great job on that. So my topic defensively was the ball pressure. The offense was started deeper. Comment in the chat, everything was uncomfortable. Like Caleb Love, Davis were uncomfortable bringing the ball up on every catch. The segment that we talked about, the banner moment that Jared had yesterday, you brought up earlier today about the 2 turnovers. You know, X was able to deflect the ball with appropriate ball pressure and kick out for Galloway for a layup. And then Geronimo's right there on a catch when Nance has to catch it in a deep corner, which is a horrible spot to have it. then gets how many times we had hands on the ball, but he knocks the ball loose, dives. And that was a key moment because that gave separation where they were never able – I think they got it back to within five maybe at one point or a couple of points, but they never got it closer to that after those two great hustle plays. But the pressure pushes the offense out, and it takes time off the clock, and then teams got to rush. You're never going to hold a team to, you know, no points because teams are going to hit shots. And, in fact, their first two threes were so well guarded and deep. But I was just – I love the way X and Jalen – and Trey can put pressure on the ball. And even Tamar and Miller, who struggle sometimes guarding the bounce, were there trying the best they can. But that's going to give a lot of teams trouble because you can't run your offense. And maybe in the second half, you start getting tired of that. Like, I don't care how good you are. Man, that wears on you. And I think the cumulative effect, I've said that word, you know, that's a drink word now for anyone. Consoni says cumulative effect, take a drink. But you wear people out with that kind of pressure. And that's sometimes where stats don't show up. I think X and Hood Schifino of ball pressure. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and you know, when you have an All-American big in Bacot in the post, that ball pressure makes it incredibly difficult to feed him down there. You know, it's what we saw last year when IU played Purdue is they tried to make those catches as far out on the wings as possible, and then it was immediate ball pressure as soon as they catch because that makes a post entry really hard. And you look at the flip side of it, North Carolina let Indiana do whatever they wanted offensively, and Trace Jackson Davis got numerous clean looks on the block because of that. And so, yeah, just the ball pressure is so, so important, and Indiana has two incredibly gifted in Jalen Hood Schifino and Xavier Johnson guys that are able to put heavy ball pressure without fouling and without getting beat. And those are two incredibly important things. Cause if you just put a bunch of ball pressure and you're fouling the mess out of guys and you got to go sit on the bench for half the game anyway, it kind of defeats the purpose. But if you can you move your feet, play without your hands, move your hips in there, which both of them did an excellent job. And, you know, and these are And Caleb Love and RJ Davis, these aren't like two slouch guards. These are two guys that led their team to the national championship last season. And so that, pretty awesome to see.
And the fouling situation, I felt better after watching it again today. When you're at the game and the crowd's all mad and yelling, ref, you suck, and all that kind of stuff, you know, every call seems bad. Sometimes the most aggressive ball pressure team will get fouls. And that's an area of concern. I think you got to play that level of defense and try not to foul or know when to back off a little bit. When you have a 10-point, 11-point lead, one of the quickest ways to let a team back in is to foul and stop the clock. So that's a point where you can get into film and teach that. But now I want to ask you, sometimes with that drop coverage and the rim protection and wanting to go hunt blocks, Indiana got outscored on second chance points 14-6. Indiana won the rebounding 40-39, but I'm always concerned with this team with rebounding. I think the guards are doing a good job. I look at those numbers all the time and share it on post games. Thought guards had good rebounds, but they got we had trouble securing and ending a defensive possession at times, even as good as we are. And so I have here, if you could explain the importance of that crackdown blockout when a big comes off his man in drop coverage on the ball screen or from block help to fly and try to block a shot. It leaves his man unblocked out, the crackdown blockout, which is so, so important on those contested twos.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's essentially the help the helper mentality. You know, when the big comes up to help in – you know, may not even be trying to block the shot, but comes to help, backside defender's got to drop to take away the dump off. Well, it's the same thing on the rebound. When Trace Jackson Davis go flying in the air, his man's left uncovered, you know, and maybe that's in a Bacot. And there is a clip, I think, of Trey Galloway did an excellent job on the crackdown block on Bacot when Trace and that's actually a great point. I should probably clip that one just to kind of explain what we're talking about here. Because, yeah, it's so vital to getting out and going, you know, in your offense, and obviously vital to not let the other team score on putbacks. You know, it is a hair concerning when you rely so much on funneling everything towards rim protection, because you do run the risk of giving up offensive rebounds. You know, and then when you're playing somebody like Bacot, he's a monster down there. It compounds that a bit. But yeah, like you mentioned, you know, that crackdown block is just, it's vital to everything you want to do to get out and go on the opposite end.
Yeah, and that's something you got to drill and drill and drill. And I think Indiana's working on that and getting there. Like I say, I think the guards are going to rebound. But that's just something to watch going forward and that I would work with the team on as you face some of these bigs. And you want TJD to go try to get blocks. You know, go get them because that just changes the mentality of the game too. And that wears on people too when you got that big dude jumping up and swatting stuff. So let's move to offense because you need offense. You need to score points. And I thought the team was so amped up, Coach, early on. They were a little bit out of sorts with some of the shot selection and a little loose with the handle. They only had 8 turnovers overall. But I thought the first 6 minutes, I saw in our Discord and other places, slow down. I heard people in the student section yelling to slow down. And that is just because the atmosphere was great and they were really excited. And then once they got into the flow of the game, I thought offensively they did some nice things. But you mentioned something about how TJD was fantastic in the post. And he's got so many reads of when to kick it out, where the double's coming from, when to go baseline, when to do a little Sigma face-up move. And I thought he had a strong game. You did, too, in reading his post moves. But explain to our listeners how that's difficult to do and how we got a high-talented post player right now that's really playing a lot better than he ever has.
Yeah, and the main thing is you know, you obviously only have 30 seconds to get a shot off, and you know, you're going to bring the ball down the floor. But basically, when Trayce Jackson-Davis catches the ball, usually there's somewhere between 15 and 20 seconds left on the shot clock. So it's got to be quick reads. And then teams, they're going to try to do things to confuse them. You know, it's just like coverages in football on defense. They're going to do things to disguise coverages and all that different stuff. And teams are doing that to Trayce Jackson-Davis, and he's absolutely picking them apart and making the right read every single time, almost every single time. And he makes it look so effortless that I fear that like somebody like Malik Mernu might step into those shoes next year and he might not be as good at it right away. And people might be like, oh, what's wrong with Malik? But like these reads Trayce is making are elite, high level, you know, things that make you the player of the year in college basketball. Because I think 4 times last night, North Carolina threw a double team at Trayce, like a hard double. And I think IU scored 2.3 points per possession on those. You know, a couple kickout threes, one dump off to, I believe it was Geronimo for a layup. And then there was one more that I can't remember what happened. But every single time IU scored. And so that throws things off right then and there for North Carolina because they're like, okay, obviously doubling is not working. So then he gets to be single covered in the post. And then they're going to try to sit on his dominant shoulder when he can go to his right shoulder, left hand. And now he's making great reads and spinning back to his right or over his left shoulder. Even though sometimes he shoots it with his left hand on that side, he's still countering how the defense is reading him and playing him. And so there's just, and sometimes he sits and waits. Sometimes he'll back in, sometimes he'll face up. You know, there's just so many reads that he has to make in such a quick period of time. And I'll be damned if he's not making every single one right.
So let's talk about North Carolina. Early on was choosing to double down from the strong side, the feeder of the basketball. So if I throw the ball into the post, my guy was going to go down, and they kind of half dug a little bit and was waiting for him to put the ball on that. And Indiana had normally sent a cutter through and then would space up on the weak side. But Indiana made the adjustment either through scouting, preparing, or early in the game making that decision to keep someone strong side and not cut through. And I think that is a great choice. That's, again, another situation. We'll talk coaching at the very end of this segment where Hood Schifino hit a three, and there were some easier kickouts instead of kicking it out always across. But that was interesting. They were doubling down from that strong side, and that allowed – that's a read. That's an example of what you're talking about here is you're not sure how North Carolina is going to come into post early on until it gets in there a couple times, and you're going to see a multitude of coverages. But I wrote that in my notes that was interesting, and that's why Hood Schifino was able to score early because he was the one entering the ball. His man was kind of half digging or going hard, and then the kick out, and then he was able to attack a closeout, or he was able to pull and hit a three. But your thoughts on how you handled that kind of action?
Yeah, and I think something that gets lost in all this is I think there's a reason North Carolina did that. And I actually think that reason is how Miller Kopp has been shooting the ball. And so, yeah, you know, these things, you know, that Miller Kopp does 3 games ago might impact how Indiana plays against North Carolina, which is hard, you know, hard to wrap your mind around sometimes. But if Miller Kopp's not shooting close to 50% from deep, maybe they are sending his guy over to double from the weak side. And then that doesn't leave Jalen Hutchinson open or Xavier Johnson open or Tamar Bates open on that strong side. But Miller Kopp's been shooting the ball very well. Pretty much the scouting report on him is absolutely don't let him catch and shoot open looks, because those are the ones that he's hitting this season. So they're like, okay, we're not going to come off of him. We're going to come from the strong side. And then Indiana counters and says, okay, well, we're going to just leave our guy right there. If you're going to double from that strong side, we're not sending that guy through. We're just going to park right there and shoot a nice little 20-foot three-point shot that's pretty much wide open, and they hit two of them. And so those little subtleties, I think, are so important.
That's a great point, too. Like, we get so enamored with stats, and the guy who scored the most points and got the most rebounds played the best. But you can be effective as a teammate by being a threat. We talked a lot about it, spacing. We're going to talk about spacing coming up. But Miller Kopp is spacing the floor by keeping a defender, and then they had to change their post coverage, which then helps TJD with his reads at 15, 20 seconds, and this is how it all fits at this level. So I'd like to talk about the ice screen, how they ice a screen. North Carolina was not wanting the middle ball screen to take action. They wanted to keep it on a side. That's what we mean by icing a ball screen. So they were forcing the ball handler to reject the ball screen or not take the ball screen. And normally what you like to do with that is have a five who pops. Well, we don't really have a five that is a three-point threat, so you had to do some different things. One of the things I think you saw was a straight line drive that our guards were really good and quick enough to beat that guard off the bounce straight to the rim. Hutchinson got a left-handed layup. Trey Galloway did it once and was able to hit the roll because it took the post player over by just straight line driving that ice. And really, they don't square up the ball handler. They really want to influence it towards the baseline, which gives a good quick guard an opportunity to make that first initial dribble and get somewhere. And that's where you saw a lot of times, you know, I call it snake dribble, where the point guard would get in there and get the guy on his hip and then slow down and back up. And it looks a little discombobulated to the normal fan, I think. But that's what you instruct someone to get him on your backside, maybe hit a floater, maybe force the post player to come up, and then you can dump it to the big. I thought Indiana handled the ice screen. They even did some rescreening to do that. But the straight line attack shows you how quick our guards are, including Trey Galloway, being able to do that straight line drive. Your thoughts on how Indiana handled UNC's icing the ball screen?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome to see. And I think I have it clipped five different times they got a straight line drive to the hoop in that ice coverage. And I think what makes that ice coverage or that straight line drive so effective is Trace constantly remaining in the window to receive a dump off in that straight line drive, because that then the big can't commit to just taking away Xavier Johnson or Jalen Hutchinson, because then they're able to dump to them. So I think that was huge too, was Trace also maintaining the proper spacing and being in proper position to where he can get that dump off on those straight line drives if that big ever wants to fully commit. And that was kind
who's
of
in that corner. Was that a strong side ice where there was a shooter in the corner, or was that an empty, what I call an empty, where the ball screen's just happening with the big and the guard? So when he's straight line driving, is there someone not helping off? A lot of teams will not help off the strong side corner on those straight line drives.
I can't remember.
I thought there was someone in the corner.
Kopp was in the corner.
So you're not leaving Kopp. That's another example of that opened up that straight line drive. They don't want TJD to get to the rim. They don't want Kopp to have a catch and shoot three. That leaves a window, a lane for your quick guards. And that's something too that we got to give Miller Kopp credit for, because he didn't really have a lot of stats last night, but he took defense away, which allowed other players. So let's talk spacing. You brought it up. You brought spacing, and you commented to me earlier today that you thought Indiana's spacing has been outstanding. So how are they spacing the floor, and why is it working?
Yeah, I think the biggest shift that we've seen from last season is first of all in the ball screens, they like to put somebody on the strong side. Like, say they're running a middle ball screen to the right side, they would park Race Thompson kind of in that dunker spot on the right side, which they still do from time to time, and then they would roll somebody to the left block, which would usually be Trace Jackson Davis. Well, on ball screens this year, they're leaving that block empty so that X, Jalen Hutchfino have opportunities to score off of those.
You and talked then, a lot about that last year.
I hated it.
You hated that, man. I could see almost every film room. Why they got someone in the dunker spot? Guy has nowhere to drive.
Yeah,
hey, listen to your film room.
They've got to. I appreciate Mike Woodson tuning in to to my film room. No, but in all honesty, like, it made sense. They had Race Thompson and Trace Jackson Davis were two bigs that really weren't shooting outside. They only had one creator in X. Well, now you've got multiple guys that can create. So you can kick out, and then you can attack closeouts with somebody else that can create. And so that's been huge. But then what I love is this, like, little 2-1-2 action they're running with Trace at the top of the key. You've got X and Jalen Hutchfino up higher up, like, kind of lane line extended, but maybe 25 feet up. And then you've got two guys in the corner, and it's just wide open spaces, and they're throwing it to Trace, and they're just playing off of him. They're Xing off of him. Every once in a while, Trace will just catch and go, and he's got space to operate in the middle of the floor. You know, they've run a couple of nice sets out of that action now, where they get Trace on a cross screen, getting to his favorite block. So that it's been so nice to see. And then they run that little UCLA just read and react. You see Trace Jackson Davis come up, set the UCLA screen. They throw to Trace, and then they play off of him from there. If he dribbles right, they're going to go set a stagger away. If he dribbles left, it's a dribble handoff. And to me, that's been some of their best offense, is just read and react. It's not set-based. It's just taking what the defense gives you. And
so for those of you who might be wondering with our terminology, we get talking terminology. Let's explain a little bit. A UCLA screen is a back screen where the post comes up from the low block to the elbow, and a guard has entered it into a wing, and then the point guard comes off a back screen of the big, like TJD, and then TJD will step out and get a catch just above the elbow. So we've talked a lot about getting TJD catches at the elbow. That's one way you can set a screen. They got to guard that back screen action. Then TJD catches it, and then you can play from there. He either drives or passes into a ball screen or chases those things. So when we say UCLA screen, that is a back screen up the lane from a post player for a perimeter, and then that post player usually steps out, catches a ball, and then depending on where the ball goes, a certain action on that. So that's good stuff. I mean, you can run so much stuff. You can run, you know, reverse middle roll and replace out of that. You can reverse it and screen away, all kinds of things of that. So I think the offense is a lot better. The players understand it. The players have a little more freedom. Shooting is still always going to be the issue. We didn't need the three last night because we got a lot of transition points. I think it was 17 transition points or points in transition, and that made up for any of the missed shots. And for me, it's just there's a couple open threes that I thought were good that if they go down, this is a 20-point game like it should have been. I think Indiana was 20 points better than North Carolina. The only reason it was 12 is because Geronimo had a nice three. And you're not going to make every open three, right, Coach? But it seems like Indiana misses its fair share of open threes. Contested threes or late shot clock threes are going to go 30-35% of the time.
Right.
But if you're wide open, that's got to go 60% of the time, 50-60% of the time, if you're going to really be a good team. And it's just still an area that I thought Tamar had an open one that didn't go down. I know they're working on it. In pregame, they're working on it seriously. So I'm not here to be critical by any means, but I don't know what they ended up, 22-23%. And just the amount of times where you get great looks and it doesn't go down is almost an opposite motivational thing. It's like everyone gets, up in the stand, and then you miss.
It just deflates.
Yeah, and I know that comes and goes in games. So, but something – any thoughts on the shots we're taking, shot selection, threes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the shot selection has been key to the season. I think that, you know, haven't been forcing the issue by any means. What I at least appreciate about IU is you look at North Carolina's misses versus Indiana's misses. At least, I mean, Nance had some ugly ones last night that didn't even hit the rim or – Tamar Bates had one that was in and out. Xavier had one that was in and out. If those two are in, you're looking at, 6-for-13 instead of 4-for-13, and then you're looking at almost 50%. So, yeah I'm kind of with you. Like, I want to see it improve. I know they're working to improve it. I think they're getting good looks, and they're generating good offense, which is what's most important to me. Like you said, last season, a lot of those three-pointers, they weren't even shooting good looks, or they were guys that shouldn't be taking them or taking the majority of them, things like that. That hasn't been the case this season. So I'm not incredibly concerned about it because of the looks that are being generated, and Indiana's still operating at a top 20 offensive efficiency currently. But I do think that at some point this season, it's probably going to come down to Indiana's got to make a couple shots from distance to win a game or two, and that's going to be important.
So let's talk about coaching. I think Coach Woodson's having a great run this season. Not that I'm in any position to really evaluate Coach Woodson, but that's what we do here on the Assembly Call. I thought there were some key things last night that all season he's used timeouts well. I like when I'm sitting up there and I'm like, they need to get into the post, and the next thing you know, they get it into the post. So it just makes me feel good, like I'm thinking at a little bit higher level than normal. But I think he's really got his thumb on the team a little bit more and understanding, hey, they've been a little loose. Let's go to our main guy. But I thought the first thing that I'd like to talk about is how he handled the fouling, the post foul trouble. I thought was remarkable to get through that, and we didn't have anyone who fouled out, got disqualified. And I marked down that at the 4:28 mark, Indiana was up 4 or 5, and both of their starting posts had 2 fouls and went to the bench. And I thought, man, this is a key moment. And that's right when that defensive explosion, fast break, Trey Galloway, the bench really did a good job. Geronimo picks up 3 before the half, but he comes back with 3. I thought that was just remarkable. And always when you make the decisions and it works out, it's remarkable. And if you make those decisions and it doesn't, we're going to be critical. But I like the way he's subbing. You got a couple starters with some bench players at a time. At most, you have 4 subs with a point guard who's running the show, or 4 subs with TJD. I just think his use of personnel has been outstanding this year, especially last night.
I agree. And I think it's kind of funny how he uses Malik in terms of 2 foul participation versus a race or something like that. Like in the Xavier game, he basically let Malik play with 4 fouls from like 7 minutes on. Last night, Malik picked up his 2nd. He let him play. And, it's a fairly small sample size. We only have 1 season to look at. But Mike Woodson does not like to play guys with 2 fouls in the first half. His 2 foul participation on KenPom, I think, was in the 300s last season. This season, he hadn't done it at all until last night. But I think it's funny because he lets Malik play because he trusts that if he gets in foul trouble or he fouls out, Race Thompson's going to be able to step in and you don't miss a beat, which is not necessarily something we had last season. And like you said, it's that trust, that next guy up, next man up. And like you said, managing that last night is difficult because, at one point Trace picked up a 2nd. He's yelling, don't take me out, don't take me out, don't take me out. And Woody's like, no, you're coming out. Like, you can't get your 3rd foul right now. Which I appreciate too. Like, you trust your best player and your leader, but at the end of the day, you call the shots and you're like, no,
right,
come sit down. but yeah, I agree. His rotations have been great. The one thing I was worried about, and I think a lot of people worried about, was kind of those line shift subs where it's a full bench unit. I can't remember a time where, at least a crucial time in a game this season, where one of Jalen Hutchefino or Xavier Johnson wasn't on the floor. And that's critical for guys that can create and run the offense. And to me, if it's one of those and then any mixture of guys off the bench and starters, I feel comfortable. And that's not something I could say last season when some of those big sub shifts were happening.
Right. I feel very comfortable with that as well. And the big thing for me in the offseason was, I know he loves to give freedom to his players and trust his players, and at times he let X call offense and all of that, and you want to do that some, but I thought that was a little too NBA, and I think he's got his thumb on this a little bit more, because there are times when the offense kind of gets into a hurried, people taking bad shots. I see him doing a lot more coaching of offensive stuff, especially with his young guys, but I see him calling plays more. Sets or at least actions to get the ball where he wants to go at critical times, and it usually is when you need a shot, go to Trace Jackson Davis. And I thought they run their set play coming out of halftime with the little rub screen. You've diagrammed this in the film room too, the little rub screen with the cross screen, perimeter cross screen for TJD, enter it to the right side and dump it in. North Carolina was ready for it, but I thought the ball went into TJD 2 or 3 times early in the second half, and kind of set the tone. We're in the lead. You cut it down to six. And I think that was key because TJD got going. And I think there have been appropriate times all season where he said, nah, get that ball inside. I know we can run the pick and roll. I know we can drive and kick. But let's get that ball inside. And I just think he has a better feel for this team, probably because of better players all the way around. But I think he's really taken some time to think about how to be better himself with and that offensive sequence of when to call some action as opposed to just letting people play themselves out of poor play has been impressive.
Yeah, and I think it was going to take him some time to get comfortable to the college game because you even mentioned his timeout usage last year. Sometimes you would call one, you're just like, that's kind of odd. You know, like that was an odd timing of a timeout. You know, media timeout's coming up in like 3 seconds. Why'd he call that? I think he's just gotten much more comfortable with the college game. And we knew that was going to be take some time and a shift. But, I mean, I've got nothing but praise for Woody on how he's managed his ball club, as he would say, this season, because it's been really good and it's been fun to see.
Yeah. Well, again, these are all good points. Staying in the Coach Woodson speak. I like this answer too in the press conference. And the question from the reporter was, a couple of weeks ago you said to be patient with Jalen. A performance like tonight, was this the kind of night you were waiting for? And Coach responded, quote, Jalen, as far as I'm concerned, has been solid ever since I got him. I have no complaints with Jalen Schifino. He tries to do all the right things, the winning things, to help you win. He's great off the court, just a good young man. I'm pleased with how he's been playing. You guys might not be, but I'm happy as hell how he's been playing. Those are ways to handle things. And sometimes that was a good reminder for me too, is sometimes I love analyzing the game, but sometimes we as fans and even coaches who are fans overanalyze every possession and don't see the total value. And so I would urge all of our listeners to look at the big picture sometimes. Just as we learned tonight, Tony made a great point about Miller Kopp and spacing. And yes, he didn't score. It wasn't big on the stat sheet, but he had a role in that game. That's a reminder to all of us that Coach Woodson really knows his guys. And from one game to another or a segment of play, we need to look at the bigger picture and the total picture. But I think, kudos to Coach Woodson for that information. Yeah. So
I agree. And sometimes you can do paralysis by analysis, and you can just start looking at every little number and convince yourself of a narrative you've already preconceived. You can find a number basically to fit any sort of narrative that you've got. And it's sometimes you just need to take that step back and look at it from a 40,000 foot view and recognize the what you've got and the positives that come from those things. And like you said, with Jalen Schifino, like, he's brought so many positives to this team. And, last night he had points, but that's not everything that he brings to the game. And I think that was kind of the point that Mike Woodson was making. And to have that vote of confidence from the man in charge as a young freshman coming off the biggest game so far, like, that's huge.
Absolutely. So, it was a great night for the Hoosiers on the court. We tried to break it down a little bit for you, but stay with us as we answer your questions next on Assembly Call Radio.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are.
They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Nick Zeisloft. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
All right, welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni. I'm joined with Coach Adranya, and we just got done talking about Indiana, North Carolina. We nerded out, geeked out in our basketball talk, and we tried to keep it. I think that was about 40 minutes of talk. We could have gone for two more hours, but that's just really good stuff, Coach. Thank you. It's now time for our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. So our first one is from Andrew Keenley. I apologize if I did not pronounce that right, Andrew. And he says, here's a real simple one. If fully healthy, should Trey Galloway be a starter? I'll throw that to you first.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could start him. Like, but at the same time, I like the energy that he brings off the bench. You know, I like that he can finish games. I like that he can be somebody off the bench to be a creator if Xavier or Jalen Ochofino aren't coming out. One of the two is coming out, and he can still be a creator. I think he certainly could start, but should to me is probably going too far. Just because, you know, Miller Cobb brings something a little different to that starting lineup in terms of shooting and spacing and things like that, to where, especially right now, I wouldn't rock the boat when you're having success, but I certainly think he's capable of being a starter.
I think that's a great way to answer it. Trey Galloway brings a lot, and especially if he can hit shots, but he had 11 points last night, had some nice runners, was able to get out on the break, and he's able to guard. So it's easy to say, I heard it last night from some people in the media room, should he be playing over Miller Cobb? Maybe technically, like you said, could from a basketball standpoint, yes, but sometimes it's your closers that matter, not your starters that matter. And there's some chemistry issues. Like, I think Miller Cobb is a great teammate, just a fantastic teammate. A little biased. He came and sat right next to me. I know some of you don't like his TikToks and all that, but he was filming that the words, his fellow players. But some of that locker room stuff is important. And he does space the floor, as we talked about, drawing the defense that allows TJD to do some things. So I think it's better for Trey to get maybe more minutes, but get those off the bench. And I have to give Miller Cobb a lot of credit last night. I thought defensively, he fights like hell defensively. He may not be able to guard this dribble. They ISO'd him early in the second half and drove the lane, but he hustled, and he somehow the shot was missed. And that's what you asked. Do airball that layup, right, off the left wing to start the second half. So, you know, I'm coming around to appreciate Miller a little bit more, because you got to look at the intangibles with Miller. And there is a lot to who you start, not making a big deal about that, and not rewarding the player who played best the game before with a start. There's much more to managing a team, Coach, I think, than necessarily playing that game. Maybe if there's a string of games or a certain matchup or something, you might choose to do it. But I've always tried to stay stable with our starting lineups until injury or something major needed to make the move, and then you got to communicate it so that it is not a detriment. So I would say no to Trey Galloway starting, but I would say yes to more Trey Galloway minutes. I guess that's where I'm at. Chris from IU Artifacts says, and this is a great question, what makes the defense under Woodson so much more effective than the pack line defense that Archie Miller implemented? Is it personnel or is it strategy? Your initial thoughts on why Woody's come in and been able to play defense at a higher level than the pack line.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's attention to detail more than anything, because honestly, the scheme of what they do is very much like a pack line scheme. I mean,
I'm glad you said that, because their gap control and their tagging off the middle ball screen is pack line principles. Woody just doesn't talk and call it the pack line. Go ahead.
Exactly. No, I mean, that's where I am with it. I think attention to detail is far greater, and I think that you know, there's wrinkles here and there, and their ball screen coverage is a bit different. They implemented some more things from the pro game and stuff, like with drops and things like that. But
and your three-man switching.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, the switching is big. Yeah, you know, your 1-3 can switch, and then your 4 and your 5 can switch. And then I think getting creative, though, with your scheme based on who your opponent is has also been something that Archie didn't deviate. You knew what coverage was going to be. You knew exactly how they were going to play that defense, no matter who the opponent was. You know, and sometimes they sat in gaps too deep and gave up a bunch of three-pointers and things like that, where I think there's much more attention to detail on who the opponent is and catering the defense to that opponent, which I think is why you see more effective results from this Indiana team under Mike Woodson than we did with Archie.
I agree. I will add, I think there's more attention to the rotations on weak side, which is an NBA thing. If you watch a lot of NBA, which I don't, but when I do come tournament time, man, they rotate like crazy on backsides to cover shooters and cut off drives. And, you know, regardless of what people say, they play defense in the NBA. I mean, they just get after it. But a lot of it is heavy rotations. And I know Golden State did a lot of that three-man switching on screens to keep a post on a post and certain things like that. So that's where I think the attention to detail. The other thing is what I talked about, ball pressure. I think Woodson's big on disrupting the ball handler and being there on catches, which I did not see that emphasis in the pack line. But the pack line, because certain coaches run it and then they have success or don't have success, or it slows the game down like Bennett at Virginia, gets a bad reputation. But it's solid defense. It's just where you force the ball. I mean, you still got to have good ball pressure. You got to be in good position. You got to close out well. You got to be able to help the helper. You got to help the helper who helps the helper. You got to crack down block out in every scheme of defense. I think we fans get caught up. We're not happy with Archie. We're glad he's gone. He ran the pack line, and now Woodson's playing good defense. But this is a lot of pack line. It's just a switching thing different here. Those things, which Woodson is doing a lot better than Archie did in those principles. But it's not heavy denial. It's not, heavy pressure, not, getting out and denying the reversal pass at the point and giving up back cuts. You don't see Indiana do a lot of that.
Be honest, Archie's defenses weren't bad. His bad thing was his offense. They were KenPom top 20 one year, KenPom top 30 two other years. I mean, they didn't really have a bad defense under Archie. It was offensively, they were really hard to watch sometimes.
And the ball screen coverage is key, you mentioned too, because they're going over with the drop or a flat hedge for the predominant amount of time. I've seen a little bit of switching on certain handoffs and ball screens, as we talked about the triple switching kind of stuff. They've done that effectively at times, but boy, that over, they're just living and dying with those forced twos and trying to do that. That's just strategy. So I think that's the difference in the defense. Jim Bernstein asked a follow-up to Tony's video on our offensive sets. What additional sets or plays do you anticipate Coach Mike Woodson employing as the season progresses?
Honestly, there's no telling. He's added some wrinkles.
He's got a book full.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, literally, the guy knows offense. He's run some great ATOs this season, which are ATOs or after timeout plays. And in our conversation with Coach Yah from a couple weeks back, he noted that Woody, he really takes those ATOs seriously and he gets guys in good positions. He's run a couple things for lobs that I really like. I think you're going to see wrinkles in building upon things in terms of sets and plays, but because like we said, he's got a million of them. I think I love his play names too. He's got a Sweet George Brown. He's got Corn Dog. He's got all these different funny play names that are really funny to hear what he calls them. But yeah, I mean, more than anything, Coach Yao told us we're going to go with what got us here, and that's we're going to play inside out. We're going to run things for Trace, and we're going to let him make decisions with the basketball. And so while we'll see different things here and there, they're going to run stuff to get Trace the ball on the right block. They're going to run stuff to get Xavier Johnson and Jalen Huccifino going downhill and making decisions, and they're going to run ball screen actions. Now, how they get in those actions, that will vary from time to time, but they're going to get guys the ball in places where they're comfortable making plays. And to me, that's big, because a lot of times you're going to have players that or coaches that they've got a system and they're going to run these plays no matter what their personnel is. And I don't think that's Woody. He's going to run things that get his players in good positions to score the basketball. And so I don't know if that completely answers the question, but whatever he runs, I trust that it'll be good and get the players in the right spots.
I want to comment on your ATOs, the timeout. Woodson's just a genius. I like his out-of-bounds plays, but I also like what he does to take advantage. Again, one of those things, if he needs to get the ball in the post, he makes sure he gets it done, run something, some actions there. But I want to ask you this, because I forgot to do it on a post-game show. Against his buddy Walker, who is he coached at Little Rock, I think, mm-hmm. or – was it Little Rock? Sure. I know he had Theus in for one game.
Yeah, I think it was Little Rock.
Yeah.
Because then they had Thanksgiving the next day together.
They had Thanksgiving. Well, he's coached in the NBA. He came out in a 2-3 zone after a timeout to blow up what Walker was drawing up. Was yep. that right? I came out. They had the ball first possession of the second half, and Woody was in a 2-3 zone. And I think he was just messing with his buddies. Like, I know you're drawing up something at halftime. I know you're drawing up some of this. We don't play 2-3 zone. We're just going to do it just to mess with you. What, yep. Did I see that right, or did
yeah,
was I
off? Think you're absolutely right. No, I think you're absolutely right. This first play of the second half, they came out that way, which is, yeah, that's just like – I can almost see him, like, looking down the sideline just grinning. Yeah.
Nothing's better, Coach, than a great friend that you're competing against. You want to kick his ass.
Exactly.
and, like, when you make a good play call, you just kind of look down, you know, and then afterwards you probably go out and have a beer and talk about it, win or lose. But, you know – You play those games. You have those little secret things that you know how hard that other guy works. So you throw a little wrinkle. There is a coach. I won't spend too much time on this story, but a great friend of mine. I coached with him for a year in between jobs. We had talked about how to handle this Manchester action at Manchester High School. It's kind of a little cross screen action type stuff. So we talked about how do you defend it, because we both had to play him. Well, when I played this coach, I inputted that play. And he was so mad because we scored on it, and he looked down, and I can't say live on the air what he called me. But we had spent hours trying to help each other defend this other team's action, and I knew it was hard. It was hard to defend, so I put it in, and I scored. Our team scored on it, and he was so mad at me.
I love it.
It was good stuff. All right, last question from Julie Sturgeon. What does this win at home over a blue blood team tell us in the crystal ball about the upcoming game with Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse? We can also add Arizona and the Big Ten. What does this mean, the win against North Carolina?
I think it shows you the guys are going to compete, and they're going to give it everything they got for 40 minutes, and you're not going to have to worry about effort, attitude, things like that. You know, they control their controllables. Are they going to win every single one of those games? No. But you live with that when the guys are out there competing. And to me, last night was the first time where, you know, I've watched a lot of college basketball this year already and on these teams where I'm looking at the team I use fielding and I'm like, nobody like out-athletes us. Nobody, you know, like last year when I watched the Final Four, I'm like, damn, like, these guys are in a different ball game than where IU's at right now. I have not seen that this season at all. You know, I think IU is right up there with all the big dogs. And to me, that's what's most exciting about this. Is like, I do think this team, you know, you got to get lucky to make a run in March. But I think they have the capability to be able to do that.
The word in the community a little bit, and the question was, do you trust this team? When was the last team, Indiana team, that you trust? And I don't know that it's completely at that level yet, but I like that question because I do trust this team to show up every night. I trust this team to defend. I trust Coach Woodson to put them in a position to win, and they will have their setbacks. I mean, a tough game Saturday against Rutgers, tough place at Jersey Mike's. To play, and you're going to have some ups and downs when you start sniffing yourself a little bit and feeling good and someone catches you. It almost happened to Purdue on their trip down to Florida State after their successful weekend. But this is back to a situation where I expect Indiana to compete against Kansas and go in and have a chance to win the game. I expect them to go to Las Vegas and have a chance to win against a top five team against Arizona. There is no one on the schedule that intimidates me as a fan with the guys that I'm cheering for. I just really have a level of trust that this program is back. I hate saying that. It's not we're back T-shirts or anything like that. But it is back to a position of comfort where, okay, we're pretty good, and it's going to take a great effort or something for us to take a step backwards to beat. It's not, you know, it's not one of those where you put out your best effort and you're going to get beat because you have so many holes on the bench or wherever else. So I'm feeling comfortable. Coach, any last thoughts about what we saw this week and how Indiana's doing before we call it a night?
No, I'm just excited about where this team's at. And, you know, I can't say it enough. You know, I've said it a million times already, but I loved the effort and the energy that the team has played with thus far. You know, they're kind of halfway through this non-conference big games, if you will, with, you know, Xavier and North Carolina being 2-0. But really, like you said, Rutgers at Rutgers is always tough. Correct me if I'm wrong. Has Trace Jackson Davis ever beaten Rutgers?
I know he hasn't beaten him at Rutgers. It might be total. I don't know.
I don't know that he has beaten him. But
you know, we lost to him last year.
And you know, we mentioned that clip of Geo Baker kind of saying nobody's scared of Indiana, and could that be blackboard material and stuff like that? I think it's blackboard material in a way of not like. Hey, these guys are speaking falsehoods about you. It's more so of, hey, here's what these guys think about you because you haven't beat them at their place in 5 years. You know, it's like it's more of a challenge of like, hey, he's kind of right. You know, like that to me is the blackboard material of that, not like a disrespect thing. It's more of like, he's right. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, you haven't beat him. So anyway, Coach, thanks. It's just great to talk it. X's and O's and just basketball in general. We're going to be doing some collective stuff for the community. So if you're not a member of the community, join. You can join and subscribe to Tony's Film Room, which he does a great job with scouting reports and game clips. And then I have a Coach's Corner, which is anywhere from 5 minutes to half hour shows. But Coach and Coach Marlowe and Bob Motes and our young blood Josh Pose, we're trying to break him into the business. We're going to have a variety of conversations about college basketball in general, maybe some X and O conversations. So be looking for that in our community. But Coach, I can't thank you enough for taking time, and I look forward to watching and talking more basketball with you.
Absolutely, it's always a pleasure. You know, these X's and O sessions that I always get so excited when Jared asks if we can do them, and so it's always a pleasure chatting with you, Coach. It's so much fun.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
All right. I guess that'll do it for us on this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music. Thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then,
take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
All right. I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
Catch me if you can, Coach T.
All right, Mrs. T. If I have to.
I have a confession. I was given a word to use tonight.
Oh, no. You didn't get it in?
I did.
What was the word? Guesses?
It was corn dog.
Corn dog. I did remember you said that. When did you say that?
I said Woody had weird play names like Sweet Georgia Brown and Corn Dog.
Yeah. Who gave you that idea?
Just a buddy of mine that listens to the show.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. Those are little things.
I was
things.
Trying to figure out how to work it in. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that one, but I made it without just sounding like an idiot.
No, it kind of just – I thought, okay, he knows the play calls. Corn dog, because we all have done it. We've all had you know, plays or acronyms for plays or whatever. you know, as coaches. So I didn't doubt that for one bit. That was great. Smooth. Your buddy owes you a case of beer or some whiskey or something for being smooth and doing that. So the guys ought to know, hopefully they will get wind of their shtick now in the post game is now gone on to assembly call radio. That is great. I tell you, that is the funniest stuff. It is funny, and that's team building. And those are little things, you know. I know the Yankees won and hated each other, and there's all kinds of examples of teams that didn't get along that were successful. But if you get along – so there's a guy, Miller Kopp, who starts, doesn't get a lot of opportunities, doesn't stuff the stat sheet, doesn't get the minutes that maybe he thought in transferring to Indiana, but is there supporting his teammates, making people laugh, doing those things. Again, he sat down next to me. He goes, here it comes. He was hitting me and that it was just, you know, one, I'm supposed to be a reporter there, and all of a sudden I got into fan stage, right? Like, right. Miller Kopp, IU player sitting right next to me talking to me. Let me take a picture. You know, I'm thinking he's probably thinking this old dude is a weirdo, but I am.
I love
it. That is so good.
It's fun. Yeah, they're fun. Like, they're just fun. You know, it's fun to follow them, those guys. And the behind-the-scenes stuff is cool to see because – sometimes you forget that they're humans and kids, you know, they're college students, they're having a good time. And when you win, it's a little bit more fun. And one other thing we didn't really know, but I thought was cool last night was how many players came back from several different areas, and fully embraced by Woody and things like that. Like, that was really neat.
Yeah, it was just a great night. And then Indiana, to be honest, all the kumbaya stuff were thrown out. They've got to back it up. I mean, all that good vibes can go out the window if you go and lay an egg at Jersey Mike's and don't play well and then come back and you got in Nebraska. I don't see that happening too often. It'll probably happen once or twice a year where the performance isn't that great. But every game, you have to justify your resume and where you're at if you want to win a Big Ten championship and cut down some net and then get a good seed in the NCAA tournament. You know, you don't arrive because you're playing, you beat North Carolina and call it quits. And we know this too, Coach, in the teams that we've coached, it's hard sometimes after a big win. It's harder.
Really
it's
hard.
Just harder. It makes no sense. Like, the North Carolina players are better than Rutgers. So on paper, it makes no sense that this game is going to be a struggle. But on the road is always more difficult. And then after a big win, you beat your rival. Who's your rival at Southport?
Perry Meridian.
So Perry Meridian.
The same. Yep.
Did you play them on a Friday night and have a Saturday night, or did you have a – how did that break it?
We always played them the night before Thanksgiving.
Okay. Big rival.
But then we'd always have a Saturday game after that. That was harder to get up for.
Right. You had that Thanksgiving day off, practice in the morning on Friday or in the afternoon, something out of the ordinary. Right?
Yep.
Those are all little intangible things that coaching staffs have to deal with. And we are dealing with 18 to 23-year-old, you know, sometimes even dealing with pros.
At least it's not a noon game. Like, those noon games, man, those things are just – sometimes those are a toss-up in itself.
Well, Kansas is 11 in the morning, right? Because isn't Kansas on Central Time?
Yep.
So that'll be 11 o'clock local. But if you can't get up for playing in Phog Allen, I don't see that. Again, I'm at a level of comfort.
Yep.
Coach, with
absolutely
with this. I wasn't there this summer. I'm going to be honest. I had some doubts about, you know, the substitution and what coach was going to do. I had some doubts. I wasn't sure. The freshmen, I was excited about them, but seeing them in person and in games has given me a lot of comfort.
Yep, that, I'm the exact same way.
You know, it's just back to doing some good things. So, yeah. Word, you got your buddy. That is so – that just made my day. Hey, again, Chat Mop, thanks for being here. Sorry for the I didn't play the music for an ad read in segment two. Like, I don't know what's happening, Coach, with me and the soundboard stuff. But
only two people, though, because you're – as soon as I'm done talking, you're talking. You're also trying to run the soundboard.
No excuses. I'm not an excuse guy, Coach. I never was as a player or as a coach, but there are reasons. Right.
Exactly.
There are reasons. There's a lot of buttons to push, and there's a three-man crew. You got about 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes to kind of look and do stuff. But man, this is good. I'll be in touch with you again. Check out our top 25 poll. It comes out every Monday. Coach is part of that. We have a 5-man crew here. I like doing that. It gives you just a little bit of Thanks, Charlie Trump. It's age, coach. Thanks. Appreciate it. I think you're right. Man, there's so much, Charlie, I can go into about getting old, man. I'm struggling a little bit here. But so check out that. A lot of good stuff in the community. Tell your friends about it. We do have it paid because we want to keep out some of those Purdue trolls and other people that don't want to take Indiana basketball seriously. But I think it's one of the things I'm on all the time, looking for the stuff that Coach does with his film room and some other things as well. So give us a shout out there. And if you have any suggestions.
Free trial right now too.
Yes.
That's about as good of a deal as you can get.
So any ideas you want us to talk about, this kind of thing, a flare screen or how someone's doing that, I can throw a 5-minute video together rather quickly. Tony's an expert at cutting video and doing stuff like that too. We really want to be here for you guys. You guys make it so special for us. Again, congratulations to the women's team, to the men's team. It's just a solid start to basketball. So, all right, Coach, call it a night. Try to get some sleep after both of us didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night, and get refreshed for the weekend.
Absolutely. Take care, Coach. Always a pleasure.
All right, we'll see you.